This is J.B. Crumb III with Conscious Millionaire Membership Site, and we're having an incredibly exciting expert interview today with Jamie Tardy. And Jamie and I have met a while back. We're good friends. She's an incredible person. She has interviewed over 120 self-made millionaires. She's been featured on CNN, on MSN. And she has a great book coming out in 2014. I know you're going to want to grab it when it comes out, entitled Eventual Millionaire. She also has a very special bonus for you at the end, so you're going to want to stay on this entire call. Jamie, welcome to our call.
Thanks so much for having me, JB.
Well, we've chatted so many times about, because we're both just, you know, very interested in the whole process of how people become millionaires, how to train people to become millionaires. And there's certain repeatable steps and processes that people go through, formulas, and we'll be talking about some of those today. I wanted to start at the very beginning. When you've interviewed 120 millionaires, I'm curious, how did many of those get started? Because that's the beginning, is making a decision or doing something that gets you started and moving forward. So could you talk about that for us?
Definitely. So it's funny, one of the first questions that I had when I very, very first started interviewing them, and I think I asked you this too, JP, by the way, is did they always know that they were going to be a millionaire? So like when they were little,
right,
did they have this feeling? Because I know me and you have talked about this before.
Right, yeah, because at five, I just had this vision. I'm going
to
be a millionaire when I grew up. And I was very poor, and I was just going to get out of that mess of being poor. But we've never talked about what everybody else said, so I'm curious.
Definitely. And I sort of had that weird thing of like when I was little, I wanted to be a millionaire for some odd reason, right? And I just assumed that most of the millionaires I talked to would have that same thing, right? Me and you were common, right? No, but apparently not. So when I started out my first 10 interviews, I'd ask that question every time. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they were like, nope, I didn't even really think about it when I was younger. What they did care about, though, was that they wanted to do their own thing. So most of them, and most of the people that I interview made their wealth through business. So when I actually talked to them about what was really important to them as a kid is that they were usually entrepreneurial as a kid. Lemonade stands, you know, selling books, mowing lawns, that sort of stuff. Really just trying to figure out the way to make cash as a kid. So it wasn't necessarily these big hopes and dreams of becoming a millionaire, but they just wanted to, you know, serve the purpose when they were younger to have some cash and do something on their own, right, not work for anyone else. Now, that's not 100% the case. Some of them did not have that when they were younger, and that's okay, too. But a lot of them did. So that kept coming up over and over and over again. That for some reason, they felt
that's interesting, and I did the same thing. I actually had a little tangerine juice stand, and I mowed the lawns, and I sold Christmas cards. But I'm curious, then they became an adult. And then what happened that brought them to getting started on that millionaire path?
Definitely. So a couple different things. Either they went to college, right? And the funny thing is I actually did a survey for the book that I have. I wanted to do a full survey and ask a ton of questions to all the millionaires and sort of get down yes or no questions. So I asked them, did you go to college? And if you did, what did you end up using for your degree? And the funny thing is that a lot of them did not go to college. And if they did go to college, they weren't using their degree unless they were a lawyer or an accountant or something like that. So even if they went to college, it was sort of interesting that they ended up going to college and then either finding something entrepreneurial to do in college or after. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some of them have the plan where they went to college, they got the job, they started working at the job, realized, oh, no, that's not what I want to do, which is funny because that's my story. no, that's not what I want to do. And then they quit their job to start something on their own. So those are sort of the different paths that they take. I mean, it's very similar to lots of other people. It's not as though they did something amazing or they started their business when they were 18 and that's why they're so successful, anything like that. The pattern sort of comes around that they always knew sort of in the back of their head that they wanted to do something on their own, whether they took action on it or not when they were younger, but they kept moving forward to that end goal.
And also what I heard was that there was some moment in which they realized either college wasn't the answer or the job wasn't the answer, but there was something they wanted to do, and then they went off and explored what you and I would now call, and they might not have even have thought initially, but it was more like an awareness that those other paths weren't for them.
Definitely, yeah. So
and,
if
and
they
I would
had
imagine
taken
a lot of people listening to this call, they may even still have a job or they may have started a business, but I bet there's that awareness that happens for everybody that, hey, these other paths aren't the ones I really want to take.
Yeah, I know I have that. So I think that's definitely a huge piece. And it's interesting to hear the stories. So each one of them have their own sort of different story.
Tell us a couple of the stories. That'd be interesting.
Go ahead.
Oh, I said go ahead and tell us a couple of the stories, because that would be very interesting.
Well, one of the guys that I interviewed, I find this story ridiculously interesting. So one of them is he sort of always knew he wanted to do something, but he couldn't figure out what it was, and he worked a day job. And he ended up creating this business plan that was about selling access. Well, daycares have webcams, and he'd sell access to them so the parents could watch the kids.
Interesting.
Yeah, kind of an interesting thing. So all he did was write this business plan, and he actually submitted it to one of those business plan contests, and they won. And he was so excited. So he ended up getting, I think, $5,000 in, like, radio advertising, and him and a partner decided to quit their day jobs and really go after this because, you know, they had an award-winning business plan. Funny thing is, it failed miserably. So,
wow.
Yeah, I have an award-winning business plan. It did not do anything. And they ended up pivoting to something else, which was selling those cameras as security. That didn't work either. And so I was like, wow, so you ventured off into entrepreneurial space. You thought you were doing the right thing. And then the first two things you did just failed miserably. And the funny thing is, to just finish out the story, because he is a millionaire, so I did he did figure it out. What he ended up doing was asking what businesses needed. So especially on that second time around, going, okay, let's try and sell security cameras. Well, there was a ton of competition for that. But he ended up selling like one or two. And then he went into those businesses and asked, okay, well, if you don't need security cameras, what do you need? And they told him that they really wanted proprietary software made, right? Things in their business that they could make faster. He started a company that did proprietary software for people. And a few years later, he was killing it. So it's sort of amazing how roundabout it happens. And yes, there are failures, and you don't really know exactly what's going to work and not work until you get out there and start.
But you know,
this
is a big theme, because, and it's something I talk about a lot, is that your first business model, whatever it is, even if it ends up being what works, it's going to be wrong. And you got to get out there and start iterating and trying things, and you're going to go, oh, you're going to fail. But those failures are leading to learning, and he persevered, and then he's like going, oh, let's survey the people and find out what they really need. And to me, that was about iterating his business model until he found a way to bring something forward, which was for the same market, interestingly, almost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first he was going to do the parents, and then he did the daycare centers. So that's interesting. Tell us just one more, and then we'll move on. But that's an interesting story. Thanks for sharing it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch. So let me think of someone that would be really good. Well, it's funny. So some of them here, let me I want to be able to provide you links too. So let me check out my site for just a second. Because what I'll do is I'll send you links, and you can definitely link to the specific interview.
All right, and just for the people on the expert call, these links, we will add them into the section on Jamie Tardy, so you'll have them and be able to use them.
Perfect. Awesome. Yeah, so there's other people, too, like James Schrampko. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he has an online business. Now he makes millions of dollars online, but he actually had a business beforehand working at, like, car dealers. And so it was sort of interesting. He made really great money. He lived in Australia, had a family, like, had the whole thing, but realized that that's not what he wanted to do. Like, he sort of capped out at where he could be. So the funny thing is that he ended up working his butt off on the side to start this online business, and he ended up, I mean, it took probably 2 or 3 years, but he ended up making more in his online business than he did in his regular day job, even though he still had his regular day job. And I think he said he was making about $300,000 a year on his actual day job. And so he ended up going, well, I wanted to make sure the transition worked out well, so he ended up waiting a really, really long time. So even though he was an entrepreneur making, you know, $300,000 a year, he was still in a day job, which I find is really, really interesting. So I can definitely link up to that interview too. And he talks a lot about online marketing and how it works for him. But it's just an interesting story the way that
And I would think that would be a path that a lot of people would consider as they, if they have a job, you can't just go cold turkey because you still got to pay the mortgage or the rent and the car and the kids. And, you know, you still have all your expenses. But you can start something on the side, start building that, and then when it gets large enough, say, okay, I'm done with the day job.
Definitely.
And was
definitely.
That a theme? I would imagine that'd be a theme for a lot of people, was it?
Definitely. If they have a day job. So some of them started off early when they're in college or right after college where they didn't need a ton of cash, right? Or they didn't have a family yet, so they could live on ramen noodles
right,
and that was
right,
okay.
Right.
But once
yeah.
you start having a family, you really have to pay attention to safety. Really making sure that, you know, we can eat and feed our children and have
variable.
A roof. Definitely. So really making sure that they're taken care of first. I mean, and some people made the switch. Instead of just going from day job to amazing business, some people go from day job to freelancer, right? Figuring stuff out, just being like a freelancer kind of a thing, and then grow the business after they have the time. Because it's always a hard thing working a day job and going and doing
and
your
you
business
can start
at night.
Freelancing today. You've got Elance, you've got Odesk. I mean, that's where I get a lot of resources.
Yeah, so do I. It's funny. One of the guys I interviewed, his name's Ian Ippolito, and he actually started one of those websites. It was called VWorker back in the day. Actually, it was Rent-A-Coder way back in the day. He ended up just selling it recently. But it was funny because he did the exact same thing. So he had this really amazing website that made a lot of money, and he kept his day job for I don't know how long, which is crazy. I'm like, why didn't you quit? He's like, I was scared. I was really scared
that's important
to
acknowledge that there is fear in taking the risk of being an entrepreneur, and it's okay to, I think it's healthy to say, well, sure, because it's a different path. It's not like you have a steady income, and you and I both know one month is not the next month.
Yeah, definitely. And it's
hard. They're definitely different. So what do you think are the steps that someone needs to take to be effective? You've talked to me and you said a lot of people were serial entrepreneurs and there were certain steps that they took in order to be most effective. And that would save a lot of people time if they just took the right steps to begin with.
Definitely. So one of the things that I find really, really interesting is what are the common themes on how millionaires start businesses? Like what really actually worked for them? Now, don't get me wrong, there's still issues, you still have to push forward. But one thing that I really found kept coming up over and over and over again, and I sort of turned it into a bit of a system, like this is what millionaires usually do. And so one, like the very, very first step is to try and get an idea, right? Very, very important to have an idea at the very beginning.
Right.
Either you have an idea or you have a target market that you need to talk to in order to find out what that idea is, right? Whatever that pain point is. But it's more than just that step. A lot of the times when people are new to business, and don't get me wrong, way back when I used to do this too, like, hey, I have this great idea. I think it's going to be awesome. And then you start putting time and money into it. That's not what millionaires do, to tell you the truth. Going through and chatting with a serial entrepreneur, I had a great interview with a guy named Jason Cohen, who runs a company. I mean, he's a big-time serial entrepreneur. He's done a bunch of different companies, all million-dollar-plus businesses, for a lot more than a million, I should say that. And he just started a new company called WPEngine.com, and they do hosting.
Well, and we happen to be using WP Engine to
you
host
do.
Our,
I love
our membership site.
I adore WP Engine. So good. He'll be happy to hear that. So one of the things that Jason did when he was starting WP Engine, and I highly recommend listening to that interview too because he really breaks it down, but this is the same thing that comes up. So his process is Billy Murphy's process, is a whole bunch of other millionaires' process that we've been through. So the very first thing is getting that idea, but that's not enough, right? And you might even have more than one idea, and that's fine. Going through a process of validation before you ever put time or money really into it is hugely important. And it's not just asking somebody if they'll buy it. Hey, I have this idea. Do you think it's a good idea? Right? That's not enough. it's really about going into depth and figuring out what those pain points are. So both Billy and Jason called.
And so when you say validation, could you give us maybe one or two or three steps that someone does to validate an idea so that there's something concrete that someone's doing?
Yep, and that's, yes, exactly. So what they both did was call like 30 to 40 people.
So they surveyed.
Well, not just a survey, though, because it's a little bit different. What you want to do is actually call and do really open-ended questions. So it's not like, hey, do you have this pain? Yes or no?
No. What do I mean? But they went out by survey. I use it as a broad term. They went out and talked to people to find out about what's true for them and where the pain is and what they might want. So that's what they did to validate is they went out and found out, is there a need out there in the market?
Exactly. And the funny thing is, though, once you start one phone call, you really try and leave it really, really open-ended. So you don't even want to say specifically that you have this idea, what do they think of it? Don't even really mention that idea. Just sort of go through some of the pain points that they have. Like talk about a specific industry, a specific tool, whatever it is, and then start digging deeper to find out what they would really want. One of the things that Jason Cohen says that I found really interesting is once you start talking to people, if something keeps coming up over and over and over again and it feels like the same conversation over and over and over again, then you probably have a good idea. What he said, though, is sometimes people will go, oh, you're right, I have a big issue with this, and the way I think you should solve it is this. And if everybody says something slightly different, that's not good. Because the way that everybody is looking at it is different, and it will be hard to provide one solution for
that specific
problem.
Right.
Exactly. But if
so
it
you're
sounds
looking
like the
for
same
themes.
Conversation
you're looking
over
for
and
a
over.
Pattern.
Exactly. You're looking for validation over and over and over and over again. So that way, you're not spending tons of time and money trying to figure out if this is actually an idea that people will buy. Then at the end of the conversation, say, if I can do this for you, will you purchase it? And not only will you purchase it, but give me your credit card number. Like Jason said, people were giving him, like, yes, please, I need this right now. Do it. I'll give you my money.
So to get the credit card, it leads me to believe they came up with some kind of price.
Yes.
And how did they come up with that
price?
Did they ask the people, what price do you want to pay for this? Or how did they go through that process?
Well, each one's a little different, and Jason actually touched on this in his interview. He goes, some people are like, don't talk about price that first time. Jason does talk about price that very first time. He's like, what would it be worth to you? They say a price. If it seems in line with what he was thinking, see if he can actually sell it. Because a lot of the times what people will do is ask their friends or family, which isn't really their market.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I think that's a big mistake people make. Because if your friends and family are not who your market is, all you have is just another set of ideas that are probably wrong.
Exactly. Well, and they might be like, oh, this is really good. And, you know, just because they want to be supportive. And you'll be like, oh, would you buy something like this? And they're like, yeah, sure. And then you come back and you go, oh, can you give me money for it? And they're like, well, no, not for me, but I think other people would pay for it.
And you and I just went through the process of writing a book, so we know how much is involved. And I'm sure you did the same thing. I went out, and it wasn't the friends and family. I went out and had people who were in my market read the book and tell me, so what do you think and what's missing?
I did the exact same thing.
Yeah, because it was my market that knew. And I got great feedback. But, I mean, I love my aunt, but she wouldn't necessarily give me the feedback that I needed. My market can say, oh, I would also like a section on this. And I go, okay, great. I'll write a section on that. You know,
exactly.
That's how I wrote the book.
And sometimes we aren't our target market. Sometimes we are, and sometimes we're too close to it, so we can't make a valid decision. I know a lot of people, especially I chat and talk to a lot of people that listen to my blog, and they'll send me their ideas, and they're like, I think this is a really good idea. I think this is solving my problem. And that's sometimes where it starts off, right? So it starts off with, oh, I have this idea, and it would solve my problem. But that doesn't mean that you are the exact target market. Maybe you're weird compared to everyone else. You need to validate it over and over and over again.
So after they validated it, what was the next step most people took?
Well, there's a great book called The Lean Startup by
Yep,
Eric
I have The Lean Startup. It is a fabulous book.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's funny because it's definitely a great book. Some people think it's a bit dense, but pretty much the summary of that book is having a minimum viable product. So most
right.
of the time with the millionaire, especially in like Jason or Billy's case, is they get people to say yes to having the cash and do as small of a test as humanly possible. So being able to move forward and figuring out some sort of very, very small product that people can start to pay you for and then tweak as you go is going to be really, really important because you don't. They can say how they want to do it all they want, but then when they get it in their hands, they may be like, oh, that doesn't actually work. Not everyone's an expert on, you know, UI design or anything like that. So they can tell you what
right.
they want, but then until they start actually using it, I saw a picture the other day of what Twitter looked like at the very beginning, which was hilarious because it wasn't anywhere near what it is now. And that's okay. A lot of the times I talk to people and they want to have the end result, you know, a big company end result, whatever that is. They want that now. And we forget
so
that we
start
have to go
with
through that
kind of
iteration process.
Bare bones 1.0. Get
yeah,
it out there, and maybe it's at the bare bones price, or you know, but get it out there and start moving the product, and then build it as you go. But get something out there and going. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. I think one of the things that newer entrepreneurs do is they're scared. Don't get me wrong, that's totally normal. But they're so scared that they hide behind the website or the creating of the what I call passive actions, not active actions.
Right.
So passive actions to me are things that are small and tweaking because they don't want to go out and actually cold call someone because that's scary. So it's easier. Well, I'm going to do online marketing and try some pay-per-click and not actually talk to anyone. I love the active action of really like going out, asking for the sale, getting real customer feedback and, you know, being in the weeds to figure it out instead of just sort of hanging behind your computer and that's enough.
Well, I divide things frequently into, and everything that we do every day, we have, because it's part of my system, is that you have three priorities, and all of the results have to have an ROI for everything that anybody does. And the ROIs are either it's about building traffic, it's about making a sale, or it's about enhancing a product. Mm-hmm. And it's only the traffic and sales that's going to put money in the bank. So when everything's said and done, that better be 80% of your activities once you get going.
Exactly. People are like, well, eventually, if people assume they can be like Twitter, right, who haven't made, like, any money. I know they just had an IPO, but still, they hadn't made, like, any money. Most businesses cannot last that way unless you're venture-backed. We need to be looking at the revenue on day one. How are we going to get to the revenue? How is this actually going to work? Because that's the only way you can create a business and grow is you need to be paying attention to that revenue when you first
so
start.
That sounds like another step is that successful entrepreneurs start with how soon can I get the revenue?
Definitely. And if they don't, right, if they're not sure, they're willing to like put in, I interviewed a guy named Aaron Pittman yesterday, and he's a friend of mine, and I've interviewed him a couple times, and he's always looking for new opportunities. Right, and what he'll do is he'll probably drop like 20,000 every new opportunity to see if it'll work. Like he creates
right. okay.
landing pages, he figures stuff out, he talks to people, he tries to figure out if this is going to be a good opportunity for him. And he is, I mean, he's a serial entrepreneur to the max. I don't know how many businesses he has, but a lot. And so, like, that's his process to go through and figure out, okay, how fast can I get to the cash? And is this going to work? And if it is, then we turn up the dial on it. But we need to know that first before we move forward.
Right. Well, that would be the same. It's like a miniature version of a pay-per-click. You're going to run a pay-per-click, and maybe you're going to put $10 or $20 in it. If nobody who clicks on that comes to the landing page and converts, then either you got the wrong headline there or you got the wrong headline at the landing page. But something needs to change, and you don't need 100 people to tell you that.
Well, that's a really good question. So it's funny because I was actually asking Aaron about that specific thing yesterday. So to me, I like to go out, and most of the millionaires like to actually talk to their customers. Aaron will talk to some of them, but he mostly
right.
puts a lot of cash behind PPC. The interesting thing is he drops $10,000 on a landing page and then $10,000 on pay-per-click because putting, I mean, and he doesn't have to. He said you could probably do $500 or $1,000 on the low end, but you do have to really put enough information, enough money behind it in order to find out enough information before it works. That's why I kind of like the way that Jason Cohen does it a little bit better. To Aaron, he can drop $20,000 on figuring out whether or not an idea is good, but if you're newer, you kind of can't. And phone calls are free, so being able to find out that way is way easier than, you know, dropping $20,000, because there could be, when you're doing pay-per-click, you could have your copy all wrong. Maybe the idea is an amazing one, but the writing is bad.
But it's the wrong headline. It's the wrong copy. And
exactly.
So you have to figure that out step by step. So there's going to be a lot of
iteration. And if you're not good at that, though, then that takes a long time to learn. So that's a whole side
but
project.
The phone call is free, as long as you have a phone line. And most people have at least a cell phone.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree, going out and talking with people. So these gives us, this is some of the steps that people have taken. And what are the things that get them the fastest traction? Because really that how soon can we start putting money in the bank and how soon can we quickly grow the business is a question that most people starting out have. And even if they have a company, if they've gotten stuck, they need to get traction. So what are some of the specific things the people you've interviewed have done to get fast traction?
Well, one of the things that they pay attention to is if this target market already has pockets of people somewhere. So sometimes you look at the landscape of your target market and they're disjointed, so it's really difficult to get a hold of them, right? So I have clients that are doctors and have a podcast all about pre-meds and how to get into medical school and stuff like that. The interesting thing about those kinds of people is they're affiliated with groups within their school, but there's no bigger overarching thing. So it's like 200 people here, 200 people here, and that's it. And there's no like huge place to access people, right? So if you think about your market and what you're actually trying to target, if there's like trade associations, if these people congregate and you can find your target market easier, it's going to be way easier to bump up the marketing. You know what I mean? Just turn up the dial. If people on Facebook are saying, you know what I mean, I'm really excited about hunting and you have a hunting thing or something like that, then you can target them a lot easier than if there are little teeny pockets everywhere. That's way harder to turn up the dial and make things go faster. So really trying to pay attention on who your market is and how you're going to reach them, that distribution method, how are we going to get to them, that's also a really important thing when you're trying to go faster.
Okay, great. And so what are some of the – I just want to touch on mindset for a moment because it's such a critical part of becoming a millionaire and creating wealth. What are some of the beliefs that you found early stage and then even serial millionaires have that kind of differentiate them from maybe the crowd that's not really taking that path?
That's a really great question. And when I first started this, I put millionaires on a pedestal. So I was like, oh, they must be different. They must have, you know, grown up differently. They must
godlike features, perhaps. Right?
Yeah, right? But like, they're not like me.
We bleed.
They're totally
we bleed just like everybody else, and we're scared as shit sometimes, to be blunt.
Yes, totally.
You know? It's
and
true.
I think
it's true.
Piece. But one of the things that does keep coming up back over and over and over again is they're willing to get uncomfortable, right?
The willingness to get out of the comfort zone.
Yeah, push the envelope, and their confidence grows every time they do that. So, of course, they didn't start out, and some of them started out way, way worse than I ever have, like homeless, in a car, like crazy stuff. But as they start pushing, as they start growing, I mean, I interviewed a woman named Dani Johnson, multimillionaire now, huge. She was on the show ABC's Secret Millionaire. She was on a whole bunch of different fun stuff. And one of the really interesting things when she talked about her story is she was homeless at like 19 years old and living out of her car. And she ended up chatting and meeting some very successful people. And she went, you know what? Even if I'm the dumbest person here in this entire room, if I don't try and push forward, I'm never going to get anything more than this, you know, $6 an hour job that I have.
Right.
Even if I was the dumbest person in the room, and even if their ideas only worked 1%, I'm still going to make more than being, you know, a waitress or doing something like that. So she pushed forward. I mean, it was a very simple thing in her head, but she thought, why not? Right? What's it going to hurt? And so she started pushing forward just for that sole reason alone. So I think the mindset with people is they're willing to try. They're willing to push out of their comfort zone a little bit. They have a bit higher risk tolerance. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some of them are super risky, and I can never imagine that. But most of them are. They're risk-averse, but they're really careful, and they calculated risks. So it's more about, okay, does this make sense?
So they do good risk management in that they look up front and go, okay, I'm not just jumping off a cliff. If I'm going to go off a cliff, I want to have three parachutes with me.
Exactly. Well, I mean, interviewing Aaron yesterday, he's like, so if you have a day job, don't quit it.
That's the dumbest thing ever. Yeah, I remember, I won't say who the person was. It was actually a relative. Early on when I had already, you know, well, I was right. It was in the first 3 years when I was first making the first million. And they told me something that didn't really resonate very well with me. And now I know it was just wrong. They said, but bear in mind, they never became millionaires. Okay, so this is not a good philosophy. So I'm going, okay, this is not a good, don't do this at home, kids, all right? That kind of thing. They said, go out and buy the Rolls Royce and you'll figure out how to pay for it. And that just seemed like, you know, there was a part of me that's going, oh, I think you ought to like, and then I had another person because I happen to like, you know, I happen to love cars, right? So, I remember in law school, I had a roommate that I'd keep a room over where college was. And he goes, well, if you have to ask what it costs to do the oil change and all that, you can't afford it. And I thought, that doesn't sound right either. I mean, to me, it's like if the brake job's going to be $1,000. Seems to me you ought to know that up front. You know, that ought to be part of the game plan. You go, okay, I'm buying in, but I know what I'm buying into, and I'm willing to do that level of risk, or I'm willing to spend that money. I've always been one, let's know what we're going for. And then, okay, now take the risk. But you need to know what you're getting into. You need to know as much as you can about it. And research is cheap.
Research is, I know. Thankfully,
it's
free.
It's called Google.
It's
you
not
know,
a big
in
deal.
A day, think how much you can learn about anything you want to, any business you want to do. If you took 8 hours, how much could you learn about that industry?
Definitely.
Yeah. So there is this. But I want to go back to the getting out of the comfort zone, because I was sitting here because I always like play word twist, and I'm going there could be a get out of the comfort zone at least once a day. And how many people in 365 days would have grown tremendously if they just did one thing every day to get out of their comfort zone?
That's actually what, do you know Tim Ferriss from the 4-Hour Workweek?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I interviewed him, and that's one of the things that he had on his desk, right? Do one thing that scares you every day.
Yeah. Yeah, because you grow. You grow from that.
Yeah, even
you
if
know.
It's scary. It's a good thing.
Well, even, especially if it's scary, because I remember, this isn't related to being a millionaire, but the point will be there is that, you know, you and I talked, my father died a couple of years ago, and the last 4 months he was in a facility, he was 90, he had a stroke, and I, you know, made the decision 3 months before he died, I was going to do the eulogy, and at that point in time, that was like the hardest thing that I had ever done emotionally, because my dad was my best friend. To have to write that and in the moment of his death give the eulogy, I knew was going to be really, really hard for me. And I did it, and typical of what happens with growth, and it's typically the thing I'll say the next day. The next day I said, wow, if I did that, what is it that I can do that I hadn't been thinking I could do before?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You know, and I think that's the power of people getting out of their comfort zone is that if you did that, whatever it is for you today, what is it you could do tomorrow that you never had even contemplated you could do? And how big of a business could you really build? And how big of a difference can you make out there in the world that you weren't even thinking that little old me could make that difference? Yeah, little old you, because that's what creates difference. Someone like Steve Jobs decides to make a difference and does.
Mm-hmm.
And they start in the garage. I think that's the great story of the entrepreneur and why this is such an exciting path. And I don't think it's ever been more exciting. You and I have talked about this so much. Look at all the tools and opportunities that are available to anyone. and you didn't have to have gone to college and you don't have to have this course. You can become an expert in something pretty quickly these days because of all the information that's out there.
Well, and everybody's sharing it. Like, 120 millionaires, and you know this, Jimmy, I live in the middle of nowhere in Maine right now. And so, like,
I really want to thank you. Before the call, we were talking about that, and I couldn't believe when you invited me to just come stay as long as I wanted. And I couldn't say,
of course, anytime.
But I tell you, on South by Southwest, I might be knocking on the door because I'm determined to get to South. And there you're going to be, right in the middle of South by Southwest. So cool.
Definitely. Well, nobody wants to come visit me in Maine, especially when it's 20 degrees out like it is.
I can understand. I happen to like Maine. Maine's, well, I love Camden. Camden's a great
Nice.
City.
I live pretty close to Camden. And I
do. You? I've been there three times. There's this little restaurant I go, and I get this, they have lobster, obviously. Everybody gets lobster, but they have the best blueberry pie. I've been to Camden three different times. I love Camden.
It's gorgeous in the summertime when it's warm.
Yeah, my dad and I actually went there in October and did the leaf turning, and it was wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I want to visit.
Great.
We're going to probably come back for the summer. I mean, it's definitely gorgeous.
So coming back to the millionaire path and kind of wrapping this up, this has been great. I mean, I always have fun when we talk, and you've given so much great information. I want to tell you how much I appreciate it. And how I know that your book is going to be wonderful. And I want to make a point because people may not be getting this. Here I have Conscious Millionaire. You've got Eventual Millionaire. And we don't see each other as competitors at all. We're like constantly talking, well, how can we help each other? You know?
Definitely.
And it's
Which
the
I really
collaboration.
Appreciate. We're so lucky.
That, the collaboration is what really makes the journey work. Because you have people, you've interviewed me. Here you're in my membership site. And in a month and a half, we're going to be at New Media Expo again together. And so it's the collaboration and I'll say the people I've met that really allow me to explode and allow you to explode. And it's not part of what we were talking about today, but it is an important part of that entrepreneur millionaire path is noticing, don't think of people as your competitors. Think of them as just, you know, other people who are out there doing similar things, and there's ways you can help each other and have fun knowing each other.
I agree. We're so lucky we live in an age where it's not necessarily all about competition. My mentor is sort of old school business, and he always would be like, well, you're sort of, you know, you have to pay attention to your competition. You have to do better than them. And thankfully, I live in a world where the world is our oyster, and we can actually sell to anyone. And somebody that's going to buy my stuff might also buy your stuff, too, because it's both really great stuff.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
I mean, I'm recommending your book because I know that people will, you know, it's not like I just want someone to read my book. I want people to read, you know, 50 books next year. Because every week you can feed your mind with all kinds of great ideas. So just to wrap this up, I know that you have something special to offer everyone. So why don't you go ahead and tell people about that and how they can get this special report from you?
Yeah, if you go to my site, which is eventualmillionaire.com, right there it'll have the 3 habits of all successful millionaires. And so I went through over 100-plus interviews trying to really pull out what those 3 habits are that people do to become successful. And they're actually not really the ones that I mentioned today. So go check that out. If you just put in your email address, you'll also get every Monday, my listeners call it Millionaire Monday. So every Monday there's a new interview all for free with a new millionaire talking about how they did it and exactly the steps and tactics that they took too.
Well, that's great. And just for if you're listening, the website will be next to Jamie's picture in our expert interview section on the membership site. So you'll have all this information and you can go there. And I highly recommend that you get her report, that you join and listen to her interviews, because Jamie does great interviews. I've been on her interviews and I don't think anybody does better interviews. You know, honestly, you're fabulous in interviewing people. So this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking your time because I know how busy you are preparing for your own book launch. I know how much is involved. And you just told me before we started that you sold your house in 11 days. So I know how much packing you have to do now that you weren't expecting to do for a few months.
Definitely. We're out before Christmas. Oh, no. Yeah, we've got
a lot
of fun.
I know. But it's exciting you're going to Austin. That's great. Jamie, thank you so much for being on the call today. And for everyone listening, we have 2 expert interviews every month, and I look forward to you joining us and listening to the expert interviews on the membership site.
Thanks for having me, Jamie.